From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 23rd day of January, 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. The folks from the Andersons right here in Champaign County will join us too to take a look at the cash grain market. We'll discuss the weather forecast with Mark Russo at Risk Pulse out of Chicago and hear more about the signing of the executive order that will pull or withdraw the United States from the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. New President Donald Trump putting his pen into action earlier today, and we'll do that right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this 23rd day of January 2017. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, joined by Kurt Kimmel, as usual, for a Monday. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, where he serves as their senior grains analyst. Hey, Kurt, thanks for being with us today.
Well, you're quite welcome, Todd.
Now, tell me about trade and how it moved through the day. I wasn't paying much attention. Was there any impact once the news got out that the president had actually signed an executive order to pull the United States out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership?
Well, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, your farm organizations might be able to address that a little bit better, but I don't know if that had a whole lot to do with the trade itself. If you go back to look at these trade agreements, there's a lot of moving parts. As we became a global market, it'd be nice to, have a level playing field or access everywhere. But this doesn't mean acceptance of the country. There's laws there in these agreements to be able to file complaints, subsidizing countries, their own producers and stuff. So there's a lot of moving parts there that has to be evaluated. But if you go back to day one on trade agreements, Europe 30 years ago, had an issue with beef going from the United States into their country, and there's loopholes in these agreements, and particularly the health concerns, and that's where hormone issue was brought up, and it kept our beef out of Europe for quite some time. As we, move through NAFTA and a lot of other agreements, we come to modern day history, and China particularly has been using the GMO issue. And of course, some of the lawyers have jumped on that, but whenever a country needs grain, they're going to buy it. When they don't need the grain or ag product, they're going to say something's wrong with it and not buy it. So we'll see how this falls out as time goes on. But it's nice to have some type of level playing field, but that's going to be hard to come by. We'll see what happens. What's more of a factor is today's trade was the weather in the southern hemisphere. The wetter areas were wanting to show a little bit more of a drier forecast and give them a chance to dry out some, but the areas have been missing the rains, expected to be dry for the next 10 days. Trade's fairly well priced in. A smaller Argentina crop, originally the USDA is up towards 57 million metric tons. There's ideas we've priced in maybe a 51, 52 million metric ton for Argentina at this point in time. Technically, We've had a fairly good run up and through here. The momentum indicators are at the upper end of the trading range. We're due for some type of correction here as we look for an 8 to 10 week cycle low here over the next 2 weeks. Seasonally, from now until about February 8th or so, there is a little seasonal downdraft, but that kind of goes along with the Chinese lunar holiday, which is starting next week. And they'll supposedly be low-key all next week as they celebrate that holiday, Todd.
And looking forward over the long run, once we get into February, we'll set, of course, the USDA's crop insurance numbers. Some have thought at this point, between that and maybe some early season sales of soybeans, we might be able to get a lot of the new crop covered. Would you be of that mind?
Yeah, we'll see how it pans out. February is the most popular month for producers to watch the markets cheering it on for those who use those programs. And well, I think we're probably, what, a buck or so higher than we were a year ago. A little bit lower input costs. So, you know, the bottom line's there. We've done a lot of strategies by putting in a price floor. Probably one of the most fearful things for a producer has been selling too early, like last year, and then watching the market go higher. So, you know, we've been using a price floor. That way, if the market kind of rolls over here this spring, we get those big bean acres. And as export news slows, we've got some price protection. But yet, if we run into some dock strike or weather concern here in the U.S., the market goes higher, you still have the cash beans to sell higher because, you know, it's hard to commit a lot of bushels that you haven't produced yet. But we like the price floor. The other strategy is, if you don't like the price floor, is use the scale-up selling approach. You know, have some targets above the market here, kind of lay into it. As long as you have the bushels, these are fairly good levels to be pricing beans. Corn-wise, we're still kind of open on that. We've seen a lot of buying beans selling corn, buying beans selling wheat on the spread. Today, I think they kind of reversed that spread a little bit, gave corn some support. So corn acres, 2, 3, 4 million less, a little weather. Corn might have a little bit more of an up in through here as we go into late spring, early summer, Todd.
But anything for the livestock producer today?
Well, fastest been remarkable. We back there in October, we thought we'd go below a buck and stay below a buck, and we rallied $20, $25 out of the hole here. Guys are optimistic. A lot of green grass this spring here with the moisture pattern we're seeing. It looks like livestock feeders are going to stay somewhat firm here as we move in the spring. Hog-wise, we'll see how the numbers unfold here as we go through this first quarter. Overall export demand is going to be the key. We've been exporting a lot of pork in through here to Asia. We need to see that continue to keep pork prices higher.
Hey, thanks so much.
Very good. Take care, Todd.
You too. That's Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, President Trump has made good on a campaign promise to ditch the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Earlier today, he signed an executive order to start the process of withdrawing from the 12-nation trade deal. White House Chief of Staff Reince Priebus made sure those gathered in the Oval Office understood which orders the president was signing.
All right, we're going to sign three memorandums right now. The first one is withdrawal from the United States from the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
At this point, the president signed the order and showed it to the press.
Everyone knows what that means, right? We've been talking about this for a long time. Thank you. Great thing for the American worker, what we just did.
Withdrawing from the deal will be welcome news to progressive Democrats and labor groups, some of whom Trump is scheduled to meet with at the White House today. It's likely to anger the other 11 nations involved, as well as more mainstream Republicans and economists, some of whom hope Trump would simply leave the deal alone for a few years, leaving the door open for him or another president to pick it up later. Brian Duncan is a grain and livestock farmer from Polo, Illinois, and is very concerned with the president's actions and how it will impact agricultural trade.
I guess my question is why? Why would we withdraw at this point? Why not use it as a tool to negotiate? And I know there are some provisions in TPP that do change and affect NAFTA, and as far as some of the, I believe my understanding would be some of the intellectual property rights, and there's some things like that that are addressed in TPP. And I think if you dovetail this with the farm bill, I'm really concerned because it could be a 1-2 punch for agriculture.
Duncan says the way to increase agricultural prices is to improve market access. He made his comments on Illinois Public Media's morning talk show, the 21st. You'll find links to the show highlighting trade, agriculture, and the Trump administration on our website at willag.org. Just one other quick item for the day. Overall inflation over the last 12 months increased 2.1%, but food prices remained unchanged. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics Consumer Price Index for all urban consumers was up 0.3% in December, with gasoline prices up 3%, but the food at home index fell 0.2%, its eighth consecutive decrease that reflects an overall 0.2% decrease over the last 12 months. Four of the six major grocery store food group indexes fell in December. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined by Todd Hubbs, now agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. He writes the Weekly Outlook and today discusses soybeans and the potential sale of new crop and what he thinks about that potential marketplace. Bottom line first, Todd, what is it producers should be considering for 2017?
I believe producers should be considering maybe selling a portion of their 2017 crop in this price rally that we're seeing in soybeans right now. I understand the hesitancy to do so based on what we've seen historically, especially last year with soybean prices. But as we move through this marketing year, while it seems similar to 2016 right now, I think there's some fundamental things that are different. And, you know, I look at Central Illinois a lot. You know, if I see $9.90 harvest price new crop soybeans in Central Illinois, that's 70 cents above what Gary Schnitke and others at University of Illinois have said is the break-even price of $9.20 for soybeans. So if you could lock in a portion of, you know, 70 cents for your harvest price for soybeans, I think it might be a good idea.
So fundamentally, how does this soybean market trade seasonally, and what are the differences that you see between this year, last year, and maybe several previous seasons?
Well, this time last year, the USDA forecast ending stocks for soybeans at 440 million bushels. And what ended up happening, and everybody thought there would probably be maybe an expanded acreage in soybeans, and we had a bad crop in South America. Exports went up throughout the year for soybeans, so we ended up exporting way more soybeans than were predicted. And people didn't plant as many soybeans last year as what people were assuming would be planted. And so what we ended up with is a price run-up through 2016 in soybeans. It sort of feels similar to this year. Everybody's talking about an expanded soybean acreage. I've heard reports maybe soybean acreage would exceed corn acreage. I personally, when I'm looking at 2017-18, I've put 4 million extra acres of soybeans into my calculations. And, you know, while we have a large export number for soybeans, traditionally we see soybeans have a strong seasonality. They expand from harvest up through February and then decline through the rest of the marketing year as the major importer, China, and others source out of South America as their crop comes in. Last year, there was a crop failure in South America, and both Argentina and Brazil had bad crops. This year, we've heard of flooding in South America. You know, private estimates have ranged from 100 million to 150 million possible production bushels loss of production in Argentina. But we're not seeing that in Brazil. The USDA raised the Brazilian production forecast by approximately 74 million bushels. So we're not going to see, in my opinion, the same dynamics out of South American production that we did last year, which in turn probably means we're not going to see the same export result we did last year. When you add on top of that, this probability of a large expansion of soybean acreage, all that's hanging over this marketing year and next marketing year. So I feel like if we can lock in some prices at harvest above cost and 70 cents above cost, it may be a good idea, especially if you're thinking about expanding soybean acreage.
Yeah, that was my next question. I'd like to take up this in kind of two forms. So if you're going to put another 5% acres in, or maybe you just, let's make it easy, if you're going to put another 100 acres in of soybeans, are those acres you just want to go ahead and pull the trigger on them?
I would probably price some of them if you could. Sell some of that beans off of those expanded acres at a minimum. I'm not saying, you know, sell the whole crop, but if you could lock in 70 cents above cost right now on your expanded acres at a minimum, I think you won't there's a good chance you won't regret it come harvest time. Now, having said that, there's a lot of uncertainty right now in South American production numbers and in U.S. possible production for 2017. We really don't know what the planted acreage is going to be. And we don't know what kind of production we'll have in the U.S. But if we continue on this path of excellent yields in soybeans and we expand acreage in soybeans, we could be awash in soybeans come this fall. And I think the downside risk for soybean prices this year is the most dramatic I've seen in a few years. So previous times we've seen these ending stocks deteriorate, it's been a production loss in South America like last year, or the years previous we've seen increased imports from China driving the ending stocks numbers down. I think this year that growth in Chinese imports might not be there, and I don't think we're going to see the production losses in South America like we did last year. So there's a lot of downside potential in soybean prices, in my opinion.
Thanks so much, Todd.
Thank you, Todd.
Todd Hubbs is an agricultural economist on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. Hey, Mark, thanks for being with us this afternoon. Can we start in South America and check in on crop conditions there? They had been pretty tough for a couple of weeks. Are they getting better?
We think they are here, Todd. And with the pattern here upcoming, well, I should start off with what we've seen over the past week or so is that we've seen warmer, drier conditions in Argentina following the heavy rainfall over MLK weekend. So we've had now 8-9 days of drier conditions. There's been some rain activity, but it's been quite limited. We see that limited rainfall continuing through the end of the month across Argentina, especially in the wettest areas. So that should help to improve overall crop conditions. And along with that, too, with the limited rainfall, we'll come above normal temperatures. Once we get into the early part of February, we do see better chances for rainfall and cooler temperatures. As it looks right now, we do not see any big, heavy rainfall similar to what we've seen in recent weeks. So that should continue to improve crop conditions as we move into February. The same is true across Brazil as well. There's been a drier bias in northeastern Brazil. However, that is in the process of changing with improvement in rain, and we see that persisting as we move into February. So bottom line, Todd, right now, looking out into February, we're just not seeing any big red flags for South America.
How about in the United States? Any red flags for February here besides what we saw over the weekend in Georgia?
Yeah, well, certainly some of the rain activity of late has been quite heavy. Now, that's occurred in what had been some of the driest areas, including portions of the southeast. We also had a week ago, we had the big precip in areas of the plains, hard red winter wheat belt. So some of these large precip events, while causing some localized flooding in the short term, it's actually helping to make up some of the longer-term precip deficits in place across areas of the southern U.S. Now, the one thing that we're watching here as we move into February are some indications looking up at the polar vortex and up in the stratosphere about getting a return of Arctic cold in areas of the central and eastern U.S. Probably not until the middle part of February and beyond, but something to keep an eye on here going forward as to any winter kill risk, whether it's in the plains hard red winter wheat belt or here in the Midwest soft red belt.
One last thing, check Eastern Europe for me. I'm thinking about some of the hard red winter wheat in Ukraine, Russia, maybe even in Europe itself. Have you been keeping track of that, and how's it look?
Yes, well, one thing to watch there is they're actually going to be influenced by a brief shot of Arctic air coming up later on this week in Eastern Europe and Western Russia, really centered on the Black Sea. At this time, it does not look problematic, and one of the main reasons for that is that they have ample snow cover, except in a few pockets adjacent to the Black Sea, but those pockets should improve over the next couple of days prior to that Arctic cold coming in. So as of right now, we're not seeing any significant winter kill threats over the next couple of weeks in Europe or Russia.
Hey, thanks so much, Mark.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Risk Pulse. He's out of Chicago, Illinois, and joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.